There is a great mystery hidden in the universe that oftentimes overflows onto our life. And this great mystery is about two things essentially. Number one, food. Number two, friendships. Can I get an amen? Food and friendships are the sacredness of our lives. And it's almost as if God gives us sacred meals. Have you ever had that experience where with great intentionality, you prepared a meal and you invited the neighbors or you invited some friends you hadn't seen for a long time, or maybe you invited a coworker, and just in the giving and in the receiving, just in the listening and the sharing, there is God and sacredness, and there's a spirit that is so full and it's so rich, and there's a sense of God is present with us in the meal. There is a sacredness that pours from the heavens, and it's all about food and friendships, the sacred meal. And in the incredible novel written by Victor Hugo called Les Mis, and it's been translated, of course, many, many times into plays on Broadway, into movies, and most recently into a musical. There's a scene right towards the very beginning, and this scene, you see, it's the Wolverine, I tell you. No, it's Hugh Jackman. No, it's Jean Valjean. This character who, Jean Valjean sings, Wolverine sings, by the way. And in this musical set in a movie form, the very first scenes, Jean Valjean is a criminal. And in this world, and maybe even in our world, once a criminal, always a criminal. And there's this great stereotype that goes with being a criminal. And Jean Valjean has really no hopes at a life, but he's free. His papers are signed. And you see these first scenes, they're actually awful because they show the hopelessness of what a freed criminal has. And then all of a sudden you have this incredible moment where the priest in the city finds Jean Valjean and invites him to the table. Food and friendships, relationships being formed. And not only does he give him food, but he gives him a warm bed to sleep in. And if you've ever seen this scene, the nuns are on the other side of the table and they're like, what are we doing with this criminal at the table? It's fantastic. And so in this scene, Jean Valjean is literally just woofing down his food. He's famished, he's exhausted, and he's furiously eating. And then the priest in the middle of his eating says this prayer. And there's so much grace at this table because the priest doesn't mind. The priest knows he's hungry. And how often have we been like, just try to get the kids quiet for just a second so we can get a little prayer in. But the priest doesn't mind. It's all grace at this table. It's all this receiving and this giving and all this goodness being poured out from the food. And in the middle of the night, Jean Valjean, this anxiety seizes him, and he proceeds to steal all the silver dishware. And he shoves it in his bag. And in the book, the priest wakes up, and he actually assaults the priest, and then he leaves. But in the movie, this doesn't happen. And the very next day, Jean Valjean, he's found by the police officers. He's brought back to the priest's house. And the police officers are like, he had the audacity to tell us that you gave him all this silverware. And the priest does this outstanding thing, and he says, release him. He's right. That's what I said. But Jean Valjean, I'm angry with you because you didn't take the silver candlesticks. And he puts them in his bag, and it's an arresting, compelling scene. And then he sings this, and I'm not going to sing, just so you know. He sings this, use this precious silver to become an honest man. By the witness of the martyrs, by the passion and the blood, God has raised you out of darkness. I have saved your soul for God. So in this unbelievably compelling moment, you have this death, this man who in all his relationships with the world is dead. And this other man, this priest who gives this man life. And this scene is so rich. And you know the story that Jean Valjean goes on to be a transformed man and to help many other people go from death to life. And so this scene in this movie, it's rich, and it's a scene of grace, and it's a scene of beauty. And what's stunning to me about it is, why it is so stunning is because we see these examples far too few, don't we? Oftentimes in our world, our relationships aren't filled with grace and beauty and goodness. Oftentimes, some of our relationships are filled with brokenness and pain and anxiety. And this sense of ugliness sometimes can pervade our closest relationships. And so when we see scenes like this, our hearts are quickened, we're inspired, but we live in a reality where relationships are broken, where they're frayed at the edges. And I don't know about you, but I've experienced this distance in my relationships with others. Sometimes my friends move away. And then there's sometimes where there's kind of that awkward backpedaling where friends I once thought were friends are no longer my friends. And then of course there's that physical death that happens. When you lose someone you love, there's this hole in our relationships with others. But then there's this other one. I can't tell you how many times my friends who are in business have told me about deceit in people they trusted, business partners that they trusted, and this sense of lies and ego and greed that just kills our relationships with others. And then there's this other that I've experienced is this deep disappointment in our friendships. The commitments and the friendship you thought that was going to be there just sort of crumbles. There's a sense of deep loss and deep pain. And all of us have experienced not these incredible high moments over the table, but these low moments of brokenness in our relationships. And as Americans, we like to talk about it this way. We like to talk about our relationships are awkward, right? That's why we love The Office and Steve Carell and this incredible show that thrives on awkward relationships. But it's funny and it diffuses it, but it's these relationships that they acknowledge the fragility of our relationships, how clumsy we are in developing deeper relationships, how ungraceful, how difficult, how unmanageable and uncomfortable relationships can be for us. Are you with me this morning? We live in a culture where the depth of our friendship can be determined by a like on a Facebook page and a one-day birthday shout out to people. And there's this lameness and superficiality. There's this death in many of our friendships. And then we come to this moment in the Gospel of John, this incredible moment that we've titled the whole series after Lazarus. And Jesus gets word that his friend Lazarus has died. We're talking physical death. And he doesn't seem too overly concerned. He sort of takes his time in the story. And as a reader, you're kind of like, what's going on? You know, Jesus, use your mojo and let things be right with the world again. And he takes his time, and it's so beautiful, because when he finally gets to this gravesite, I don't know if you've ever been to a funeral or been to someone's house where people are grieving. And it has to be one of those funerals where people just let it loose, because we've all been to those funerals where it's like, oh, this is awful and hard and we're gonna kind of not really grieve. But have you ever been to a funeral where people just are all over the place, like crying, like letting it out? There's no comfort today is sort of the feeling in the room. Well, this is the scene as Jesus shows up to his friend Lazarus. And this is what the passage in the scripture tells us. When Jesus saw her weeping, that is Martha, and the Jews who came with her also weeping. It's this communal grief that's going on. He was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. Literally, his bowels within him were speaking to him. His heart was grieved. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" And they said to him, "Lord, come and see." And then Jesus began to weep. So we have this just incredible picture of this God who weeps. Who weeps at the brokenness and the fragileness of all our relationships. Who weeps when all that we see in our friendships is split ends, things not put together in the right way. Jesus weeps. And we're in that moment. We're in that moment of brokenness in the Christian calendar. We're in this moment where 2 weeks from now, we are gonna have a celebration. But right now, in this moment, we think about all the relationships of our life, all those friendships that feel so fragile, so awkward, so on the verge of death. And in this story, though, at the very end of it, Jesus raises this man. There is a power that exists in God, and Lazarus is brought to life. And as readers, you're like, I don't know how that happened. There's so much mystery here. I got so many questions as a modern person. But the central conviction of the gospel is that this is the God of new life. This is the God who pours new energy and new spirit and new life from the heavens. This is the stuff of what it means to be Christian. But we sit uncomfortable in this time with that deep conviction in the Christian faith. But in the very next chapter, chapter 12, there once again is food and friendship. And it says this, the passage that was read today, it says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. There was rejoicing, because this friend who was once dead had come to life. And this is the God who not only in our physical deaths brings all the things in our life, things we've been talking about together, our careers and our dreams and our deepest desires. This is the God of new life. But at this table, they are celebrating with bread and with cup that there is a new person, there's new life in Lazarus. Their friendship that once broken is now restored, but then something really strange happens. Martha served and Lazarus was one of those at the table. Mary took a pound of costly perfume made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. And so you have this scene. And there's been people throughout Christian history that have tried to explain this scene. But what's striking about the way the Gospel of John tells this beautiful story is a couple things. It's that it's the quantity and the quality of the perfume. And so it's not just that it's really, really good stuff, right? Which is this deep symbol that new life is not gonna stink like death. New life is going to enliven everything. Your relationships that once were so broken are going to one day come alive and be fragrant, be beautiful once again. But then it's the quality and it's the quantity. This is a whole lot of perfume here. This is a God who does something more than we can ask or we can imagine. But then there's this really strange scene, right? And when we read it just as literature, it's beautiful. She's wiping his feet with the tears, and the Greek word is ekmaso. She's ekmasoing him. And we're kind of, as a reader, left with this place of like, what is really going on in this place? And we don't figure that out until the Gospel of John, until the very next scene. In chapter 13, there's another meal. So meal, meal, meal. God pouring out abundant new life through these meals. And in chapter 13, Jesus, they just ate their meal, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around them. And here's the fascinating part. He's ekmasoing them. I know it's really nerdy, but the very same thing that Mary is doing, ekmaso, wiping his feet, is the same thing Jesus is doing to his disciples, wiping their feet, literally cleaning their feet off. And this is a deep metaphor for serving other people, right? Because if you've ever washed someone's feet, there's a whole lot of service that's involved in doing that, right? And so the Mary for us, it's striking. Mary comes before Jesus in this story. So Mary, this incredible woman, she's the model. She's the example. And it's quite moving that this woman intuitively knows the gospel story and says, I'm going to show you all, the rest of Christian history, how it's going to be with us, the people who call themselves Christians. I'm going to ekmaso. I'm going to serve the very King of Kings, the one who the fountain of new life flows from. I'm going to serve. And so then Jesus says this. He said to them, do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have set you an example that you also should do as I have done. You are blessed if you do them. To which Mary says, yeah, I already got it, right? I've already done this. It's incredible. It's just incredible, this woman, this ancient woman, Mary, guiding all of us, inspiring all of us to do what is right. And so when it comes to our relationships, we learn a couple things. Maybe not. Maybe we don't learn very much. Awesome. Okay, so, thank you. There we go. Okay, so this is really, really amazing. So first, we learn from Mary this anointing, right? That this is the one, this is the Jesus who eventually will unleash this resurrection power. When we feel this absolute powerlessness in our relationships, this is the fountain of all that power. But then secondly, the call for us, the healing comes when we receive that power and serve one another. When we are humble enough to serve one another, but not just anyone. I love this layer that adds to it. St. Augustine in the 5th century, talking about this very verse, says this: he truly loves a friend who loves God in the friend, or in order that God may be so present. This is true love. If we love one another for another reason, we hate them more than we love them. So what we do when we serve one another is we love the divine image that is within them. Our relationships are awkward and tricky, and there's all kinds of boundaries, and there's all kinds of things that we have to do as human beings as we learn to love, as we don't love our coworkers the same way that we love our spouses, and we don't love our next door neighbor the same way we love our kids. But this beautiful Mary gives us this example, but we can love, and we can provide this healing to our world, and we can restore broken relationships when we live out of that overflow and simply love the divine within someone else. And it doesn't always, please don't offer to wash your coworker's feet. That's not a good idea all the time, but the idea is right? The idea is, how can I in a tangible way love the divine image within them? How can I put myself in such a way as to show them that love? And that is what begins the deep healing of our world. That's where we get to the priest in Jean Valjean. He had this expensive silver and he could give it away and it could change a man's life. And he could see in that very man, in Jean Valjean, this divine image. This divine image that could be a better man, right? And so this Mary gives us this model of how a relationship can be healed. Very slowly, we're at the table. We are in the presence of the table, right, where the bread is broken and the cup is overflowing. And Mary reminds us again and again that relationships are tricky and they're difficult, but we live in the power of resurrection. There is new life for our relationships when we live out of that flow and serve the divine image within everyone that we meet. So this morning we come to the table with one another with that sense within us of wanting to feel and be overwhelmed by that divine love that flows. And then remembering that when we come to that table, when that divine love flows over us, we come with a commitment. We come with a commandment almost to love the divine image within anyone. So I want to just ask you to pause and to think about the relationships in your life. Think about how uncomfortable. Think about the painful brokenness. It's hard, isn't it? Some are more complicated than others, and some are just awfully hard to think about. And there's some relationships where you just need to, you need to back away. You need to set good boundaries. But there's some relationships where you need to step forward into, where you need to take yourself out of the equation and learn to love the divine image within them.